With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Dags igen för Ronnys rullar och nu har vi ett väldigt celebert besök här i Stockholm, Sverige. Han har gjort sin film här i Sverige nämligen och det är Adrian Garcia Bugliano. Welcome to Sweden.
Thank you so much, Ronny.
You've been here before, of course. You made your latest film, should I say, the new film here in Stockholm. And of course, I gotta ask you, why?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been trying to make a film with Christina Lindberg for many years now. I've been always a big fan of her. And I...
Not just thriller, but all the films.
I love thriller, but I love Sex and Fury as much as I love thriller. So those are like very...
Like Quentin Tarantino, all the other guys.
Those are very... there's a tie there. But I was in 2011 in Detroit, of all places, and I met there with the guys of Synapse. They have this amazing, distribution label in the US, and they, I met them there, and they told me about Christina, that they had seen her a year before. I think she was doing some conventions in the US. Yeah. And I was so excited about it, that she was still active, and they put me in contact with her manager Rick Cranforce, and we started thinking about the idea of making a movie. We wanted to make a movie in the US. It was a small movie, but yet it was kind of complicated to put together, so we worked on that for a couple of years and it didn't happen. And then I met Ricard again in 2015 in Cannes. And that was the first time I met him in person. And I was, after that, we really became good friends. And I was like, we need to do something with Christina. Yeah. So I figured the easiest way to make it happen was to actually come here and do something here.
Okay.
That was kind of the thing, we want to do something with her and it has to be in Sweden. So let's, see how we make this happen. And it happened. The actual shooting, it happened very quickly. From the moment we decided to make the film till the moment we were shooting, it was like 6 months. And then it was, a long time, a long process for post-production and stuff like that. But it was pretty fast, actually.
But did you have your own cinematographer? And so did you work with your crew, so to speak?
Not really. Just the cinematographer, actually. Yeah, he was the cinematographer of, not my usual cinematographer, but the one who made Scherzo Diabolico with me. Yeah. And I told him I was coming here to Sweden, and he told me like it was his dream to make a film in Sweden. Like Swedish films are like his
Ingmar Bergman, amongst others.
Yeah, he's a very highbrow art house guy. So his films, the Swedish films are his favorites. So he told me I would just go. I would pay for my own plane ticket, and I would go with you. And there were a couple of other adventurous guys who did the same. They paid for their tickets and they came here, friends of mine, but mostly the crew was Swedish, and they all of the actors, of course. So it was very interesting.
How was it for you to work in Swedish? I mean, you don't know the language, maybe a couple of words, but for you to get the nuances, you know, and everything.
It was complicated. I think that, you know, I was very lucky. I think, well, with, you know, Rickard did a great job pointing me to many actors from where I chose the, you know, the ones that finally ended up, you know, making the film. But he pointed me to very good actors, I think. So I was, you know,
it's a young cast, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
Very young cast.
And they were amazing. I had a very good assistant director who helped me with many of those nuances. And I think that, you know, mostly the thing is the actors were great. Otherwise, you know, it could have been a disaster. But I, you know, it was an interesting experiment. I mean, the communication with everybody was very easy. But then I realized I was telling Rickard this embarrassing fact that 2 days before starting to shoot, I realized, you know, I was operating camera. I was doing camera myself. I love to do that. And I realized, you know, there was a lot of handheld camera, and I was like, you know, I have to respond to certain cues, to certain words. Like when they say one line, I have to move the camera. Yeah. I was like, how the hell am I going to do that? Am I going to do that? Yeah, but it worked. You know, I had an idea of course, what they were saying and everything. So it just worked. And Rico was very surprised when I delivered him the first cut of the film, because it all made sense.
Okay. You know? How was it to work with Christina? We got to go back to her. She's a magnificent lady.
She's a wonderful lady. She's a hard worker. She was, you know, all for her was about getting it right and, you know, going over and over again. And she was, you know, all the time very concerned about, you know, did I do this correctly? Do we need to do it again? Not the kind of person that is going to just do it once and, you know, I hope you have it because, you know, I don't want to do it again, or that kind of, you know, diva stuff that sometimes some actors have. She's a really hard worker, and she was, you know, really concerned about getting this right, because it was a very challenging role for her. I mean, it's completely different to anything she's done before. It's a very different side of her that we're seeing here. Yeah. And to me, you know, I was very, very concerned about, you know, giving her a good, you know, spotlight. It's not the lead character of the film, but it needed to, you know, I wanted her to shine, really shine.
Yeah. And you worked with one of the sisters of Jan Kell as well in the lead. How was it to work with her?
Felice is one of the best actors I've ever worked with. Like, she's amazing. She's, you know, she's a millennial. So she would be on the phone while you are talking to her, and apparently she's not paying any attention to what you're saying. And she's like multitasking and, you know, doing multiple stuff while you're And you're like, she didn't understand anything of what I said, surely. And you would say action, and she would be like totally in character. Okay. She would do something magnificent, and she would nail it on the first take.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing that she did. Like, every time she did it right. It was amazing. For instance, when we made the dubbing of some of the scenes, she would repeat the things exactly the same with the same intention. You know, fantastic. She's remarkable actress.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think in that respect, she has something that is very similar to Christina, that is one of those persons that you put that person in front of a camera and they shine. And it's like you see them on the street and they're, you know, nice people and everything's, you know, fine about them. But you put them in front of camera and they grow. They become, you know, this huge presence. And that's a gift for an actor.
We gotta say something. This is, for me, when I saw it, it's kind of a cult movie already before it had premiered in a way, isn't it? This about magnetism and hypnosis and stuff. What does this idea came from?
Yeah, I was very interested. You know, there were a few ideas that I had as the film that I was preparing with Christina for many years never happened. I had afterwards another film that I was about to make. Like, we were 3 weeks before starting, you know, actual pre-production, and the film fell through. And I was very bummed about it. It was a film that we were going to make in English, and but there were certain ideas that I wanted to bring to life from that film. So I took some of the ideas of that script that I was interested in doing, and then I was fascinated at that moment. I am still. But, you know, at that moment, I was discovering these hypnosis records of the 60s and 50s, 60s and 70s, mostly. These things that you had to listen while you were going to sleep, and they would improve your life. And I'm fascinated about those things because they are like rare pressings in many cases, like things that they would do privately, you know, when they would handle, you know, they would make like 100 copies and send them by mail to specific people. Mm. And, you know, sometimes those pop up in eBay or somewhere like that. And I would just jump and buy them. And it's fascinating, you know, it's this idea of these obscure objects, you know, that have this kind of weird thing about them. There's not much information about many of those, like, you know, doctor whatever, you know, hypnotizing you on a record. This is a wonderful thing, you know, a very mysterious thing. And, you know, that's where I took that idea from. And then I elaborated like a concept, like themes that I wanted to explore about brotherhood or sisterhood in this case, you know, like the relationship between siblings, and you know, how can you grow apart from people that are very close to you at some, you know, at some point of your life. I wanted to explore those themes through a fantastic, you know, landscape, you know.
This is not a lot of your other films are like thrillers or horror movies and stuff like that. This is
very
kind
different.
Of a side, you take another detour here.
Absolutely, absolutely. I always try to do, you know, things that are kind of challenging for me. I'm a person who wants to keep working in horror through my whole career. I'm not interested in departing of the genre. I might, you know, do it at some specific point, but I'm not interested. That's not what I'm looking for. And but at the same time, I don't want my films to repeat themselves. I don't want to do twice the same stuff, or not yet. I mean, maybe, you know, at a certain point, I will try to do again some, you know, subgenre or something where I, you know, that I already tried and I think that I didn't quite get correctly.
We will not see a comedy from Bugliano.
I'm not sure. Not a straight comedy.
Dario,
that's for sure.
Did one. Argento did one comedy.
Yeah.
Just one.
Just one. That was enough for him. No, but I, you know, maybe, yeah, mixing comedy with other, you know, horror or, you know, general elements, that could be something along the way. But you know, but I like to try different things within the genre, because I think there are so many different things you can try to do. You know, I'm kind of trying to focus on doing more of a scary movie. I want to do something really scary, like where people jumps and screams and stuff like that. That is something that I really haven't tried. My films are more like, you know, the type of horror is more like something that, you know, kind of sets on you and makes you feel uncomfortable. But it's not, you know, I haven't tried that kind of stuff, that it's more like just making people react, which is something I would like to try now. But, you know, every movie is like a different yeah. thing. And, you know, to me, Black Circle is like the, I wouldn't say the end because it sounds weird, but it's like the, yeah, it's to me like the culmination of a process of doing more experimental or
yeah.
art house type of genre, which is, you know, very, very interesting and very, you know, it's something that I like also because it's like one of the things that I like the most in horror films is when you don't know what's going to happen next in film. You know, it's like you know, many of the mainstream films that we've seen for the past years, you know exactly where they're going.
Hmm.
You know, they're of, you know, they all made from a certain formula. And I love from Black Circle the fact that you don't know, you know, where is this taking you.
Yeah. So if we go back a bit in time, the first yeah. film I saw mm-hmm. of you, I think it was Cold Sweat.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it was this. You, because you did this.
Yeah, I'll never die alone.
Yes. Yeah. Was that before?
That was before. Yeah. It was released before here in Sweden, but yeah. maybe, you know.
Yeah. So you have been in this genre that Christina worked yeah. in with thriller, one classic, yes. in the female revenge
sure, genre absolutely. As well. This was... You know, that genre really made an impact on me, a very big impact on me when I was a kid in the 80s.
And you, as me and all the other, you saw I Spit on Your Grave, Miss 45, yeah. Last House on the Left, but that's a kind of a different yeah. because it's the parents. But
sure.
A female, Death Weekend is a
yeah,
classic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And many of these I saw in the 80s, but some of them, like Thriller, for instance, it wasn't available in Spain or it wasn't available in Argentina. So I saw those later on, you okay. know, when I was a teenager, because, you know, it was like films you would hear about, but they would be very, you know, difficult to find back yeah. then. But it all started, yeah, in the 80s with a bunch of films like this. There was one in particular that was like, you know, it was really impressive. That was Coto de Casa, probably something like Hunting Ground. It must be the translation. It's a Spanish film okay. of the 83-84, something around there. And that was something that really impressed me. Funny enough, my brother just finished directing a new feature film with the actress of that film, ah. who is like the, you know, Christina Lindberg from Spain. and those were films that really, you know, impressed me a lot. They made a huge impression on me. And after, you know, I made a couple of movies, I decided I wanted to do one of these. And I wanted to, you know, explore the, you know, this kind of rape and revenge subgenre. But doing it with a very specific approach. I was thinking about, you know, from Michael Haneke to Takeshi Kitano type of, you know, this very rough type of thing where they just put the camera
explicit as well.
Yeah, and they just put the camera there and they just let the scene go, you know, and then they find like these amazing angles and amazing, you know, ways to tell the story, but with a very simple, apparently very simple visual style. Because I didn't want to do anything very, you know, contrary to what Thriller is that I love, but I didn't want to do something very stylish. I wanted it to be rough,
gritty.
Yeah, gritty, rough, just like...
Yeah, and it is, know. Of course. And it's, yeah. It's a big impact when you see it.
Yeah.
Were there any reactions, of course, of this film?
That film was the one that, from my first independent efforts, that was, you know, a film that we made for like $5,000. That was the one that sold the most, like everywhere in the world, and it's one of the most pirated ones.
It is,
but it's like you know, in Germany they are releasing a new edition now, and it's I think like the 14th-15th edition that they okay. make, you know, yeah. from this film. It has become like a cult film, and it was it was interesting because it was a film that I loved to make. It was a great learning experience. But once I finished it, it was like, okay, I'm done with that. Like, I'm never going to do something like that again. It was too rough, too demanding for the actors, for me. It took me a couple of years to make that film.
Where did you shoot it?
I shot it in 2007.
In Argentina? Or?
In Argentina, yeah. Early 2007. And we released it late 2008. So it was like, you know, a very demanding experience. And it was like, it left me with a bad taste in my mouth. Because it's, you know, you put a lot of energy in a work like that. And to have something that is so depressing as that film, as the result of two years of your life, it's like, you know what, I love the film, but I'm not gonna do something so dark and so depressing again in my life.
Because I remember when I saw it that it gave me the kind of reminiscence of Last House on the Left,
right,
in
right.
A way.
It's, yeah.
It's very raw, it's like a documentary.
Absolutely.
Camera. So what do you think about the female revenge genre in general? Do you like?
I love it. I love it. I think that it's like, you know, it's interesting to rethink it now that the women are getting a lot more, you know, room within the genre. I think that there is a lot of, you know, purely exploitation things that you can see on those films. The older films.
The Scream Queens running around half naked.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that,
but there's also a lot of, I think it's very simplistic, some of the way that some people look at it now. That is just like, you know, this kind of, I call it like the Scream, you know, the Scream thing, you know, where people started to look at slashers like, oh, they're all misogynist and they're all about, you know, the girl who has sex, she gets killed. And it's like, that's too simplistic. I think those films were something else. There are more nuances and more things. And,
but wasn't the teenage movies like Friday the 13th and those films, when they, like in the Crystal Lake camp,
right.
When they're naked or having sex, they get killed.
They get killed.
Kevin Bacon. And
but the real question there that I think that many people got just to the surface, are they being moralistic or are we being too simplistic by saying that there is just a moralistic thing of, you know, they have sex and they get killed? I don't think it's necessarily that way.
I don't think it's moralistic.
I think many of them are exploring things that have to do with the taboos of sexuality and, you know, repressions that were very, you know, strong in American society. And I think that in many cases, in the exploitation cases, I think it was to punish those characters was a way to getting away with the sex on the screen.
Okay.
So it was kind of a punk attitude to get away with it. It's like, oh yeah, we're you know, to the censors and to these people, hey, we're showing them that these guys get killed, but what we're doing is, you know, just like putting this sex and this kind of rebellious thing on the screen. So I think there are more things to it than just saying, you know, it was moralistic.
Was that thoughts that you wrote into the script for your "I Will Never Die, I Will Not Die Alone"?
Uh-huh.
That was it. Very important that she. How was she?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Describe that woman that took right. revenge on her rapist.
Yeah, I mean, I was very interested in doing something in giving a voice to, you know, because it was two things. It was one, I love the genre, but I also wanted to provoke some reaction about the, you know, about all the violence against women that were, you know, a common thing in Argentina. And that I saw, you know, like giving some voice to these women that get raped and many of them get killed every day. Yeah. So it was like, you know, having one of them, like having her victory. And it was important for me to be as respectful as possible. I did this very explicit rape scene, but it was for the sake of, you know, not making it easy for the audience. No. Because I think that it can be, you know, it can produce the opposite reaction that you want if you just fade out and oh, the rape is over. It's like, no, I mean, in real life, that's something that destroys a life, that it's, you know, a terrible experience. So just forcing the people to just be there with these girls, it was something that was important
for me. It's not just an article in a newspaper.
No, it's exactly. It's, if you're going to put something like that, it has to be, you know, you have to feel it like an audience. Yeah, absolutely. And not doing anything. That was one of the most difficult things, of not doing something that fetishizes, you know, those things, because that happened a lot in the early rape and revenge movies that they were kind of playing with these male fantasies, you know, of domination or whatever. But this had to be something else, you know. This had to be disgusting.
Yeah, but at the same time, then, did you have criticism that said violence back is not the answer? Did people say that about the film, or how was that? Because she
beats. I didn't have that criticism. I think for most people, you know, many of my films are just plainly seen, and this is something that kind of bothers me because I put a lot of thought of these things.
Yeah,
and some people just see them as, you know, just misogynist films, which is kind of bothers me, because it's like, you know, we need to have discussions about art. We don't, you know, just putting labels, like, you know, all the slashers are, you know, misogynist, or all of this is misogynist, or, you know, we are in a moment where things are too literal in interpreting art, you know. And it's like, you know, we had this thing with Scherzo Diabolico, where some people told us that, you know, they didn't want to play the film because there was a girl tied, you know, in chains for about 15-20 minutes of the film. And it was like, yeah, but that's, you know, that's not what the film is about. The film is about many other things. If you're just like checking a box, like, oh, there's a woman in chains, so that's a misogynist thing automatically, it's like you're not, you know, looking at the work. You're not looking at what's going on. It's like saying, you know, because you could check the same box in, I don't know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah, there's this girl tied to a chair at the end of the movie, so automatically that's just misogynist. You're not getting all the nuances and all the things that are going on there, you know.
But people are a bit, you know, there's a lot of people who are kind of protected from this kind of genre. So they just see a trailer or something and maybe...
And they make assumptions.
And they close the door, you know.
Yeah, so but my problem is not with that people. My problem is that there is even people right now on the genre circuit, on festivals of genre and stuff like that, who are taking like these kind of positions. And it's like you're not really understand. And on the other side, there are simplistic views the other way around. Like, you know, I saw this film, this rape and revenge film, Revenge from Coralie Ferdinand. Yeah. And
by a woman.
Yeah. This is the thing. I hated the film. I didn't like it at all. I didn't think that it added one single thing to 1,000 films that we've seen just like that. And there was this opposite thing that it was like, oh, but, you know, it's a female director doing it. So automatically that makes it, you know, a very progressive thing. And it was like, I don't think so. I don't think the character, the female character that she's portraying, it's any interesting, it has any strength. You know, there's many things that are just like repeating the views of their male counterparts, and it's not a voice. I don't hear a voice there as a woman or an artist saying something about that theme. I just see somebody repeating that, but it's okay because, you know, because it's a woman automatically. I think that's not the way to approach, and I think that doesn't make any favor to a lot of artists and a lot of amazing female filmmakers that we're seeing.
You think
now.
It's more interesting, and is it a better content, we call it that, in those older, as we say, you know, the 70s video violence movies we said in Sweden, like Death Week and with Brenda Vaccaro, or Miss 45 by Anna Ferrara.
Yeah, that's
and As Between the Grave.
Yeah. I mean, many of those are really interesting, and you don't know where they are taking you. I think that now repeating that same way, it's not the most interesting thing to do. I think that, you know, now we need to find our own voice as a generation, you know, trying to find new ways to explore these genres.
We can go over to Scherzo Diabolico. Yeah. Because there's a young girl in danger, of course. But this is also, mainly for me, a portrait of a sad man.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely.
Really tragic character.
That's the thing. I would say that if sorry to interrupt, but no. I would say that if it's funny, because if I'll Never Die Alone, it's a kind of an exploration of something like, you know, Thriller, for instance, and those kind of movies. I would say that for Scherzo, one of the main references was actually another Born with Venice film, A Breaking Point.
Ah.
And it's the opposite. To me, it's an exploration of male fantasies. And it's about a male fantasy going totally wrong, a very toxic fantasy that many men have, that, you know, they're successful because they have, you know, I don't know, several women, and you know, they wanna have sex with young girls, and, you know, many things that are kind of accepted in the male universe, and that they represent, you know, that if you screw you know, your partners in your work to become the boss or whatever, you are, you know, successful, and that's okay in certain circles. And that it's an exploration of that, the film, you know, it's not about, so to me, it's like, you know, just taking it to, oh, well, there's this girl in Change. It's like you're not understanding what the film is about.
But this is a film like a kidnap. I'm thinking of the awful Josef Fritzl, you know, who kidnapped his own daughter and had her in a cellar, you know, and and the film Room as well, in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a kind of other genre, though, this one with this man who is, when you see him, his actions in Scherzo Diabolico, you get kind of embarrassed about how he's such a loser.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So, yeah.
But it's a, you know, a certain idea of that, you know, the, He's kind of trying to hit those marks where, you know, if I have to be successful, I have to have this and that and this and that and property and a lover and a wife and a successful job and, you know, certain things that he thinks in his mind that are, well, you know, things that are going to make him happy. To me, it was a film, you know, for a very personal for me, because it was something that I think that has to do with something that happens a lot to men in their 30s, as you know, like in their mid 30s. No, but it's like, yeah, it's something that happens at that age. I think that for many men, it's there is this idea that it's now or never. Like, if I'm gonna be successful, it's now. And a lot of people make a lot of shitty decisions at that moment,
yeah,
when they kind of like mix their priorities and they just go for their goal, their opportunity of success, and they are capable at that moment to just step into other people to get there. So to me, it's you know, it was about that.
Before we talk about the two other films, yeah, you had, I think it's very important for you to be very entertaining,
yeah,
when you see a Bugliano movie. Or
yeah, I you know, I'm very concerned about something that it's, you know, for some people it should be like a given, like, you know, this is the common thing, but it's not so much nowadays, that it's this very old thing, the idea of having one scene moving you to the next and the next moving you to the next and so on.
Yeah.
This sounds like a very simple thing that all movies should be about, but it's not today. Like this used to be like that in the old days, and
it's
now
a cornerstone in filmmaking, isn't,
yeah,
it?
But it's in you know, just like narrating anything, it should be like that. Like everything that you see on a film and every scene should move you towards the next and
like,
the next.
Like a book when you have a page turn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But nowadays it doesn't work like that. When you see a filmmaker like Woody Allen, you see that he works like that. It's,
yeah,
like they are doing certain thing in this scene and they talk about, okay, we should, you know, go to, yeah, dinner and whatever, and you see that they are having dinner in the next, and they, yeah, are and you cannot take in a Woody Allen movie, you know, almost never you can take off a scene because you wouldn't understand what's going on. Nowadays a lot of filmmakers don't do that. If you really look at it, and I see this a lot with my friends, that they have troubles editing the films, and it's like, well, I have this scene here, but I don't know if I should take it off or I should move it back 5 minutes before or 10 minutes after. If you can do that, it's because you're doing something wrong, in,
okay,
my opinion.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, this scene has to go there, and it's the only place where it can go, and it needs to be there because otherwise you don't understand the story. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I try to, you know, build my movies.
Mm-hmm.
It seems super simple, but it's difficult. And Scherzo was like my main, you know, thing to do a film like that, where you are all the time like just moving forward. And I think that that's something that the audience appreciates. And
yeah,
I think that, you know, that's something that makes my movies in general, they are, you know, entertaining.
Yeah.
Some people don't like them. Some do.
The mix of entertainment and violence.
Yeah.
How do you look upon that?
You know, I love violence in movies. I love violence in movies. I hate it in real life, but in movies, it's something that I really look forward. I don't try to impose gore or anything on my movies. If it's there, great. If it's not, you know, if it doesn't have to be there, it's not gonna appear. But I love that, and I love the reaction that it creates on an audience when it's,
yeah,
when it's correct. You know, it's,
yeah,
like,
and you
very
don't do the connection between the violence in real life and violent movies or TV games and stuff like that.
I don't think that's true at all. I don't think that, you know, I mean, I think it can be an excuse for somebody to do something,
yeah,
but it's not the real, you know, it's not the real motive for anybody.
It's not a triggering
It can be. It can be. I think it can trigger something in somebody.
Like in the States,
but it has to be
TV game convent where the guy started shooting.
Yeah, yeah. But it has to be inside that person. You know, it has to be something that has been growing in that person. And this is like the excuse, and it would be the same if somebody, you know, insulted him on the road, or whatever. You know, it could be anything.
Here Comes the Devil is maybe your most, should we say, popular and famous movie.
Yeah, it is.
How come you think? It's a kind of thing about demons and stuff.
Yeah, it's a weird movie. It's a really weird movie. I don't know what I was thinking when I did. No, I'm kidding. I was, I it was kind of a strange idea, like coming to shoot something in Sweden. And it was like we wanted to do something in Tijuana, which is way north in Mexico. It's like far from everything. It's you know, just it's much closer to Los Angeles than it is to Mexico City. So it's kind of a weird, very weird place. But it has a certain energy and a certain, you know, aura to it, where I thought it should be amazing. It would be amazing to shoot a film there. So we kind of, like in Black Circle, we did something around that, like the idea of going to shoot a film in Sweden. And it was very interesting because it was an interesting bet from the producers. It was an American company, Dark Sky Films. They were like, okay, if you can do it within a certain budget, you know, you can do it in Spanish. So they were producing this film in a foreign language, which is something really weird for an American company to make. And we did that with a mostly amateur cast and crew, like people who were just working in short films or people even with no experience in film whatsoever. And we were just my photographer, my producer, me, and the lead actor, lead male actor. We were the only ones who were like more, you know, professionals, let's say. And it was a very interesting experience, just melting with these people. And it looks weird because of that. It looks weird because it's not made with, you know, very atypical technology. You know, the lenses were vintage. They didn't work that well. And, you know, many of the things were kind of a bit off. So I think that gives a very interesting feel to
the theme with obsession, of course, is, should say, thrilling in a way, isn't it? But then here comes one of my favorites, though.
Yeah.
I mean, like all of them, but Late Faces.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you have an actor who is
he's
like
fantastic.
Charles Bronson.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of guy, isn't it? You knew that was the feel you were.
That was
after.
absolutely. Yeah, so we talked about Charles Bronson a lot with the producers, with everybody.
Yeah.
We actually had an opening scene in Late Faces. That was kind of a Death Wish type of opening scene.
Yeah.
We couldn't pull it off as well as we wanted, so we didn't use it finally. But it was kind of that feel of him like a Paul Kersey character. But it's, you know, that feel is still there. Nick is an amazing actor.
Nick D'Amici.
He's also a writer, not writer of this film. But he's a writer. He wrote We Are What We Are, the remake of the Mexican cannibal film. He wrote Stakeland. He wrote Cold in July. He's a very a very interesting guy. Very, you know, he's
very physical.
Very physical, but also super smart. A guy that would, you know, understand very well dialogue and.
From the beginning, that he's blind as well is, of course, extra thrilling in the story about the safe community where there are something in the dark.
Yeah, I love the concept of the film. They gave me the script, the same production company that made Here Comes the Devil. When we were presenting, you know, in festivals, Here Comes the Devil, the producer, Greg Newman, gave me the script. He told me, you know, this is something we would like you to consider to direct. And I've never made before that and after a film with a script that I didn't write. So it was kind of an alien thing to me. But and then, you know, it was like old American guys, a community of old American people with a war veteran as a protagonist that it's blind. It was like every one of those ideas was very strange to me. It was like very far from my, you know, my interests or the things that I know. It was interesting, but I was like, I don't know. But then I found out that the relationship between the lead character and his son, and that was the thing for me that did it. Yeah. It was like, that was the thing that I think I understand that. I understand, you know, a son that it's seeing his father growing old and realizing that his father is going to die eventually. I kind of, you know, I related to that. And from there was that, like, that I started to pick things from the film, and I said, okay, I want to do this film, you know, and because it's like, you know, it's finally a film about, you know, finding meaning to your life, you know, at the end of your life, trying to find meaning.
Yeah.
And that was a very moving, interesting thing. I thought about a film that I love, Baba Hotep by Don Coscarelli. And I was like, you know, not with the comedy of Baba Hotep, of course, a different tone, but I wanted to try to do something like that, very emotional, you know, a genre film, but very emotional about getting old. So, you know, it was a cool thing.
Yeah. I'm thinking of just final question here, yeah, because passes on.
Sure.
Your cultural background, how important is that for your movie making?
My
cultural background, right. Or I mean, you're a Latin guy.
Sure. Yeah.
And do you also, at the same time, do you have a kind of faith, a religious faith, something in your...
Interesting. I don't. I'm not religious in any way. I come from countries, you know, I was born in Spain, grew up in Argentina. I come from countries that
Catholic.
Very, very strong, you know, that's very strong there. But I don't have that. I think I was very lucky to pick things from both countries that were, I think, crucial for me to become a filmmaker and to understand film the way I do. I think that there were a lot of, you know, amazing cultural things that I could get from Spain, but at the same time I feel like people in Spain, it's a lot more, you know, dependent of the state and the things that they can get from there in terms of, you know, doing cultural things. And I got from Latin America that I got some good things, but I also got that, you know, in Latin America you're kind of on your own. If you don't find your own way to do your things, it's kind of, you know, nobody's gonna help you. So you need to get a good group of people next to you and work together with them and just be stubborn and do your thing. And that you know really helped me to you know make a lot of movies so far.
Okay. Well, thank you for your time.
It's been wonderful to see you here.
And now we're gonna have a signing session.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.